now.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. Happy Monday, everyone. This is Melissa Bilardi, your host on Help for HD. We are recording live and podcasting all about help for Huntington's disease. The goal every week is to introduce incredible special guests to educate and inspire you. We now have about 5,700 listeners, so thank you for your support and interest in Help for HD programming. Our call-in numbers today are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1 and I'll cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family about the show and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. It is an honor and privilege to introduce our incredible special guest tonight, Dr. Ira Scholson, MD, Professor of Neurology, Pharmacology, and Human Science, and Director of the Program for Regulatory Science and Medicine at Georgetown University Medical Center in Washington, D.C. He is the founder and chairman of the Huntington Study Group since 1994, which is what we're going to be talking about tonight. Hello, Dr. Scholson. Welcome to Health for HD, and how are you tonight?
Oh, hello, Melissa. I'm fine, and thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations on your appointment at Georgetown University Medical Center. Is this a recent change for you?
It is recent. As of January 1st of this year, 2011, I took this new position, having been at the University of Rochester for more than 3 decades on the faculty and prior to that in medical school. So it was quite a transition, although I had taken sabbaticals and been other places for extended periods of time, including in Washington, D.C. This is really my first major move within academia, and it's something that's very interesting and challenging for me. But I'm keeping my interest and involvement in Huntington's disease very high, and continuing with the Huntington Study Group, which remains headquartered at the University of Rochester.
Great. Now, you also founded the Parkinson Study Group, and are you still working in that capacity?
I still work on Parkinson's disease also. There's and other diseases, for that matter. One learns from one disease to apply to another. And, of course, one needs to be involved in patient care also to do clinical research. So for many years, I have and continue to be involved in the care of patients with Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, other disorders, as well as, of course, Huntington's disease.
Now, first tell us what brought you to neurology and your amazing, ever-evolving career.
Well, when I completed medical school, I took specialty residency training in internal medicine, general internal medicine, and after nearly completing that, I took a position at the National Institutes of Health because I was interested in doing clinical research. This was part of my fulfillment of my military service, too. It was at the time of the Vietnam War, and I was assigned to the National Institutes of Health, and I had an opportunity to really learn about clinical research, and but I had no prior training in neurology. I had some interest in it, but it was really at the NIH that I had an opportunity to see my first patients and families with Huntington's disease, and I think I was struck after that period of time. And subsequent to that, I completed 2 years at the National Institutes of Health, the NIH, and returned to Rochester where I did a residency in neurology and specialty training there. But certainly the time in Bethesda, Maryland, 1973 to 1975, turned out to be important.
Wow.
I should say that within a period, after being there for 6 months, within a period about 1 or 2 weeks, I had the opportunity to meet Marjorie Guthrie, who came to the NIH. She had many interesting activities in Washington, and she certainly swept me off my feet in terms
wow.
of getting interest in Huntington's disease. And soon after that, I had an opportunity to meet with Nancy Wexler, and both of them, of course, have played
two very great people.
Right.
For sure. So tell us, what is HSG? How did it come to be, and how is it governed?
Yeah, HSG is a Huntington Study Group. By the way, we don't use apostrophes either in talking about Huntington disease or the Huntington Study Group. The reason being is, as journal editors point out to us, Huntington didn't have the disease. He described it. And,
right.
So it's important,
it's not
at least for us, to be grammatically correct, just to explain why we're Huntington Study Group or Parkinson's Study Group without the apostrophe S.
Okay.
It's a group that was formed in 1987. It was modeled a little after the Parkinson's Study Group, but we formed it to really meet an unmet need, and that's the fact that although many of us were doing clinical research studies on our own, we knew that we had to join together to do these studies because, one, we could learn a lot from one another, but perhaps as or more importantly, we needed sufficient numbers of research participants that we just wouldn't be sufficient at one single center. So hence the formation of the Huntington Study Group. And it turned out right from its inception to the present day, nearly 17 years later, it's turned out to be very instrumental because all of our research investigators are also clinicians, physicians, psychologists, psychiatrists, nurse clinicians who take care of Huntington patients and families as well as doing research in Huntington disease. So it's a dual role, but everybody is clinically experienced and dedicated both to the care of patients and families as well as to doing clinical research.
That's amazing. Now, if we wanted to go to your website, it's www.huntington-study-group.org. And they can also call the 800 number, 800-487-7671. How many HSG sites are there, and who are its members?
Right. Well, the HSG is concentrated in North America. We started off in the United States and Canada together, where there are about 75 research sites in North America. In addition, we have research sites where members are part of the Huntington Study Group who do more global research with us, particularly in Australia and in Europe. So we have been international from the beginning, but we've extended that. So collectively, there's a little over 100 sites and about 250 researchers representing a variety of disciplines, from neurology to psychiatry to psychology to various aspects of nursing to social work to physical therapy. We are quite a blended group of professionals.
That's incredible. And the people that are running all of these programs are professionals in their own fields, which is really important, isn't it, for the management of all of these studies?
Absolutely. It really requires a lot of different skill sets to do this, and we're grateful for the blending together. And it also parallels, I think the research effort parallels what happens in terms of clinical care. You just need a lot of different disciplines and skill sets involved in the care of patients and families, and so too in terms of doing the clinical research that's important. I should mention that there's a lot of people behind the scenes who patients and families rarely, if ever, see who participate in research, and that includes all the people doing database management, the biostatisticians, the people who are out at the sites to make sure we're doing everything carefully. So there's a cast behind there, but certainly the people up front are the visible people are really consummate professionals.
That's amazing. Now, you have an executive director.
Yes, Sherry Cannell is our executive director. By the way, I just want to mention, thanks for mentioning our website, Huntington-study-group.org, and our toll-free number, 800-487-7671. The reason I'm repeating it, as you usually do too, is so people have a chance to take it down. We did a little survey of our website and found out to our a little bit disappointment that most individuals in the HD community thought it was just for Huntington professionals, and we've tried over time to really expand the scope of interest and activities on our website. So I invite, you know, the general community to visit us and see what we're all about. Particularly, of course, it's in terms of doing research, but right. There's a lot of other activities that we're involved in terms of education and training, and our efforts to really disseminate new knowledge about Huntington disease.
Well, we can mention, of course, you know, we'll be having CRESTI people on in June, July, and August. We're talking about TwoCare as well. So let's talk a little bit and give us a quick overview of your current trials that are happening now.
Yeah, we have two types of trials. One we call observational trials, and the other what we call clinical trials or randomized clinical trials. Let me just mention the observational trials first, because these are studies that are often very long-term over a period of years, whereby individuals, often Huntington's patients, including members of their families, but also people who are in HD families but not affected, participating. So we have three studies going on that are going on for a long time and have a major scope. One we're just completed called PHAROS, P-H-A-R-O-S, standing for Prospective Huntington At-Risk Observation Study, and this was a landmark study that we're just reporting out of individuals, adults who are known to be at risk for HD because a parent or a sibling was affected, but have chosen not to undergo any kind of genetic testing. But these individuals were willing to be followed for a period up to 10 years so we can learn more about Huntington's disease, about its biology, and also about the beliefs and attitudes and sensibilities of people at risk for Huntington's disease. So that's one study. A parallel study called Predict HD, which is directed by Jane Paulson at the University of Iowa, is looking at individuals who have chosen to be undergo genetic testing, and largely a group of people who have found to carry the gene for HD. And this is also a remarkable study because these individuals have a 100% risk, people who carry the gene, of some point developing HD. And so it's an opportunity to see, look in advance to see what happens in terms of the development of HD. So we'll know someday how to intervene.
Right, so these are observational studies, right?
Yeah, another observational study. And then the last one is a cohort. It's called Cohort. It's a larger study that is actually going to be going global soon. So these are studies that don't have any treatment intervention, as opposed to clinical trials where we're trying to test the effects of particular drugs, usually experimental drugs. And we have several of those. The largest one we have going right now is called TwoCare, the number two in care, and that's looking at high dosages of coenzyme Q. And we're looking to enroll many hundreds of Huntington's patients. I think we're just about 90 away from completing that enrollment, and that's, as I said, comparing coenzyme Q to a matching placebo and following people in an unprecedented fashion for up to 5 years. The other study, and as I said, we're hopefully going to be able to complete the enrollment in that study soon. The other one is CREST-D, which is looking at creatine in also very high dosages compared to placebo, and that's a 3-year study. You'll hear more about that, I think, soon from those who are directing that study.
Yes, we're going to be talking a lot about the studies, getting into the nitty-gritty of what it's all about, how to go about participating, and what's involved in the next couple months coming up. Let me just break in here just for a second. We're already through 15 minutes. You're listening to Help for HD. This is Melissa, your host, and our incredible special guest tonight is Dr. Ira Scholson, founder and chairman of the Huntington Study Group. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. Please call in and ask questions if you'd like. We are recording live, but you may also listen again right after the end of the show. Just give it about an hour to propagate through the website. So did you want to add anything to the current trials that you're working on? I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I had to do my little spiel.
No. It's an obligation. Now, the only one I didn't have an opportunity to mention is called PREQUEL, PREQUEL, and this is a first-of-a-kind study in people who are not clinically affected by HD, but who are known to carry the gene because they've undergone DNA testing. So it's the first time we're looking at actually a drug in this population, in this case a coenzyme Q, to see how well it's tolerated in individuals who are not affected by HD, not yet affected, compared with the experience we have in people who are affected with HD. So we're learning a lot also from that study, and that study is almost completely enrolled too. So, and then studies we've completed and reporting out, we sometimes get some favorable results like we did with tetrabenazine or xenazine, which is a drug that the Huntington Study Group did the research on and developed and is currently on the market to treat the chorea, the involuntary movements of HD. And then we do studies sometimes where the results are disappointing despite the high anticipation that we have, and we've also had some experiences with that lately. So this is a long-haul type of effort, as we know, and we're right in the process of planning new clinical trials for 2011, 2012, and onward.
Long haul, but very necessary, right?
I'm sorry?
It's a long haul, but it's a very necessary thing to do, is to go through all these trials, because otherwise we don't know.
Right. It's a long haul, and I think the challenge is to get through the disappointments. The fact that we have, for the first time, many studies going on, not just in North America but around the world, I think is good. There's, as people say in the sports arena, you need a lot of shots on goal, and you know, that's part of it. We just want to take the best shots we can, though. And
are you able to link up all the information from around the world into one database or one?
Yes, we've used a single database. Actually, the technology has really helped us do that, and we couldn't do that 17 years ago when we started, but with telecommunications and computers, what they are, it's a pretty small world.
Right. Now, are you working on some software to kind of put some of that together?
Well, we actually have that's constantly being developed by software people in the U.S. and in Europe, et cetera. But we also have our clinical trials, thanks in large part early on to the contributions from CHDI, Cure HD Initiative Foundation. We developed a really state-of-the-art computerized system and what we call electronic data capture, so our investigators can really just enter data securely
tool, isn't it? Now,
mm-hmm.
tell us why trials are so vital for the progression of research in finding treatments and ultimately a cure.
Well, in the long run, that's the only way we know that promising interventions, largely drugs that we and others are studying, either work or don't work, and also importantly, whether they're safe or not. And we do placebo-controlled trials because we don't want to fool ourselves into thinking something's beneficial. And we also need a good comparison to be sure that something's not harmful. So
right.
it's a big effort to undertake that, but at the end of the day, we'll have a high degree of confidence about the benefits and potential adverse effects of these experimental treatments that someday might be part of the people be able to go to a pharmacy to and get these types of medications. It's also important in terms of also what we call regulatory aspects, so that regulators like the FDA and other regulators around the world can favorably review what's being done and so indicate that these compounds are safe and effective and available to patients and families.
Speaking of that, what is regulatory science? And can you explain that a little?
Yeah,
this
so
like
this is a new program that I'm directing at Georgetown University, and it's really an effort to develop both a scientific program and an educational program to better inform policymaking of regulators such as the Food and Drug Administration, regulators around the world. But it's not just for regulators. It's to inform all of us, those in academia and those, importantly, in industry, working in the pharmaceutical, biological, or other aspects of therapeutic development. And so it's really developing a knowledge base, what we call evidence-based decision-making. And we're also developing a program to actually train individuals in the field of regulatory science and medicine, developing a master's program so that there will be a cadre of people who will be well trained and be able to work in academia, industry, or government to move the field along.
Now, how will your relationship with the FDA help HSG, do you think?
Well, my relationship with the FDA is pretty compartmentalized. I'm just really working in the Office of Science, and I don't work on any products at all. So
it's good to know how they function, though, correct?
Yeah, well, I and my colleagues have, you know, had many opportunities to interact with the FDA around products we're developing in Parkinson's disease or Huntington's disease or the like. But that's pretty separated from, you know, the work that we're doing just in regulatory science. That's not related to any particular product. But they're both important in the long run, and we have to be well-informed and well-trained at the same time so that we can effectively interact with the regulators and ensure we're doing the right thing in terms of developing safe and effective compounds.
Right. Okay. How does HSG disseminate information? I heard you have a newsletter coming up, HD Insights. Is that going to be launched soon?
Yeah, well, we have, first we have the website, and we think we try to keep that fresh and have information that's available to the community there. We also have scientific and educational programs each year at our annual get-together, the Huntington Study Group. The next one is in November 4th, 5th, in Indianapolis, Indiana. We're having our annual Huntington's Disease Clinical Research Symposium, which is not just for scientists, but also for the community where we're near, in this case, large Midwestern catchment area. And then later in the day, we also have a workshop for, particularly for members of the community, related to clinical research, clinical trials. It's a very interactive thing. So one is these types of programs. We will be launching a newsletter probably in the fall around the time of this meeting to provide different insights and stories, everything from interviews to scientific development stories related to HD, and that's a work in progress, but we're looking forward to that new opportunity. And, of course, with what you're doing on radio and other people blogging, we're filling one little niche of communication and dissemination.
Right. Now, speaking of that, I'd like to kind of give some upcoming show information and some announcements here before we have to go off the live portion of the show in about 5 minutes. But May 16th, we'll have Jonathan Munkmeyer and Jane Marver, and J.C. Mucha will be on our show. May 23rd is going to be some JHD programming. We're not confirmed yet, but I'm still looking to fill that show. June 6th, July 5th, and August 8th, the Crest E series will be on, and we'll talk about the clinical trials. And then we have a new group on Facebook called Help for HD, Help HSD Awareness, that my friend James Valvano helped me to form. And speaking of James, you know, he has James Talk Video, and that's a really great opportunity for HSD to disseminate information as well. Now, you've been in contact with James?
Yeah, I was in contact with James because you connected me, as you connect a lot of people. And I had an opportunity to look at his work, particularly on YouTube, the cinematography, I think, is just excellent, notwithstanding the content related to HD. But it just so happened you connected me. I had to give a talk to neurologists at the annual American Academy Neurology meeting in Hawaii. There's a big plenary session, several thousand people. And my topic was the power of social media and participation in clinical research. And I led off with a streaming of James' YouTube piece, yeah. Which I he did a piece that was also related to the Huntington Study Group, but his it's just really nice content, nicely done, and something that was very eye-opening to the audience.
I bet. It was a little shocking at first, but then if you think about it, it was so... I don't know how to explain it right now, but it was emotional evoking and true, because, you know, after talking to my son even, and the emotions that he has, it just brought everything so true to light. And not everyone has seen that at this point, you know. Everybody's kind of seen the generic version of what, you know, what HD is about, but from the film that James did, it just brought the truth up, you know. He's looking for funding right now for his second phase of the film, The Faces of Huntington's Disease, I Am No Longer a Faceless Face. Kind of had some bad news today that he was not funded by a drug company for the project. And as you know, our HDers are hurting for money. We're all kind of dealing with, you know, low incomes. And so if you know of anybody that might be able to help him out and get with him. You know, our live portion of the show is about ready to end right now. So I'd like to say thank you, Dr. Shulson, for this incredibly informative program. And you can contact Dr. Shulson at Georgetown University, Washington, D.C., or email him at irisshulson@cttcrochester.edu. And you can reach me at helpforhd@yahoo.com. And please don't hesitate to contact me with any questions or suggestions about contact for programming. We are going to go off the live portion of the show, but if it's okay with you, Dr. Shulson, we can go ahead and continue recording. So there's lots of more questions that I want to ask you. Is that all right with you?
Sure. My pleasure.
Great. And we're going to be 10 seconds off the live portion of the show. So let's get back to talking about Project Aware. Now, you have Project Aware on your website. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, Project Aware is a really important development. We've been working about 2 years on it. The Huntington Study Group portion is headed up by our executive director, Sherry Connell, and our head study coordinator, Elise Kaysen. And we do this in collaboration with the Huntington's Disease Society of America and HD Drug Works and many other individuals in the community. And its purpose is to be able to educate the HD community about the importance of participating in clinical research and particularly clinical trials. And we see three components to it. One is just being aware of what is available in terms of clinical trials. Two is hopefully developing a willingness to participate. And three is enabling members of the community to actually participate. And a lot of this is our job. How do we reduce the burden of participation? How do we educate better? How do we improve the willingness to participate? So it's a big educational program that hopefully you'll hear more about, but it's certainly featured on our HSG website, Huntington-Study-Group.org. And I think is also available by links on the HDSA website and HD Drug Works.
Right. How can we help you to kind of make a loop with the HD community on this Project Aware? Because it seems like we need to have a better interface for communication to bring that information to people. So I'm hoping that I can help in that way. I think James Talkvideo might be able to help in that way. Have you given any thought to maybe doing Facebook page or something like that?
We have, and I'd encourage you and others interested to contact Sherry Connell, K-I-N-E-L. Probably the best way to reach her is through that 800 number, and Jill Lowell at our site usually takes those calls and can connect people to Sherry. So I think we see a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of things that non-medical professionals do better than we do, such as the social networking piece, such as HD Radio Blog, such as James Wolvano, James Talk Radio.
Yeah.
So we need to learn what you do. I think the best thing we could do is collaborate and work together to do it. But, yes, we think a lot about social networking and how that can enhance participation in clinical research.
Right. It's kind of all about embracing new ideas, isn't it?
Yeah, they're new ideas, and some of them are better suited for members of the community, and some of it are better suited for the professionals to do. I mean, there's only certain things that we can say in terms of endorsing the work that we do. We can't do self-serving things, especially things that are misleading. But I think also when this is conveyed accurately by members of the community rather than us, it's even more persuasive. So
that is true.
Yeah, so it, you know, there's only so much I could promote. I'm allowed to promote, and there's so much I'm actually able to do in terms of my own capacity compared to people like yourself and James and all the other organizations out there.
Because you have regulations, and you're governed and by the government, I guess. Right.
Well, we're governed by our what we call institutional review boards, IRBs, at each of our institutions, because before we go out and tell people about a clinical trial that we've planned, we need to ensure that it meets the standards, the safety standards, the ethical standards of our institutional review boards. And we can't just go out like an advertisement and try to promote things. There's just certain things that we could say that have been pre-reviewed by the IRBs, and I think that's properly so.
Yeah, but third-party people like me and James can shout out and say, hey, this is what's happening, this is what's going on, and we're not governed by the same bylaws that you are.
No, you're very powerful.
really. So what is your plan to educate HGOs about clinical trials? Do you have specific ideas that you want to promote?
Well, I think it's it takes people being involved to find out, you know, really what is in clinical trials. One of the things we're trying to do is to relieve the burden of participation. I mean, coming into a major medical center at frequent intervals every few weeks to be part of a clinical trial to ensure that people are safe and well cared for is one thing, but that's a burden on people to travel, taking the time, people taking out of work. We often have family members required to come on in, so there's a lot of burdens to do that, and we're trying to lessen those. Well, we're looking into different ways of doing it, you know, using more telephone, email contact, even regular mail contact. We have to be mindful of confidentiality and privacy as we do those things, but we're exploring that. Perhaps one of the most exciting things is telemedicine, as I'm talking about the technology as an opportunity to do clinical research, and we're spending a lot of effort and try to incorporate that in clinical trials so we can come to the research participant and family rather than
go mobile.
They have to come to us.
Would you be able to go on a mobile quest to help people with clinical
trials? On a mobile, I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Mobile, would you be able to go mobile, like go to the people instead of them coming to you?
Well, that's not unheard of. I spent, along with many of my colleagues, we went down to Venezuela and worked on a research project. I did this most of my Februarys for 8 or 9 years, but a lot of people worked on this, and that's where the gene for HD was discovered, and that was like a mobile unit out there, I'll tell you that. That's what we call field research, and it certainly has an important role. We have to meet our research participants and families halfway, don't we?
It might be helpful.
Yeah.
Well, tell us again about your Huntington's disease clinical research symposium. When is that again?
So that is on November 5th, 2011, in Indianapolis, and it's at the Hyatt Regency Indianapolis.
And can you find that on your website?
It's on the website. It's on a Saturday, and we invite every Huntington's family members or friends of Huntington's family members from that community, and that goes from Indianapolis to Chicago to Milwaukee, and then it goes into, you know, that whole area into Ohio and south of that. Into Kentucky and areas like that. So we invite people to come to this. It's an all-day activity. One is the scientific symposium. We begin usually with a member of the HD community talking. I think we have a wonderful lineup this year of presentations, and people can hear the latest in terms of clinical research in Huntington's. We also have poster sessions where people can stop by and look at the work and talk to the investigators. And then, as I said, following that, we have a workshop on participation in clinical research, and that particularly relates to the issues in Project AWARE.
Now, you mentioned a cover art request. What is that?
Yeah, every year we've been soliciting from the community artwork that we put on our program, and we continue to do that. And I think if you go to the website, Huntington-Study-Group.org, there is some information about contributing to that.
Great. Now, talking about contributions, how do we contribute to HSG? Is there a way?
Well, we certainly welcome, like everybody does in the community, it's like, you know, we welcome the support, and including the financial support of members of the community. I guess we're all in need of this type of support, no matter what role we have. And this really enables us to continue our educational programs. Our clinical trials and observational studies are typically paid for by by sponsors and government, industry, or foundations, but all the other work that we do in terms of education, training, outreach, and these pilot studies are really not supported except through the efforts of contributions from the community and or from the larger community, not just HD. And again, there's an opportunity on the website. I think there's a little tab there about contributions, and we certainly welcome and appreciate them.
And is that like
all the contributions go to the University of Rochester, which oversees our accounts, and then we acknowledge them, of course.
Okay, now is that a PayPal setup, or what is that?
I don't believe we have that, but I know Sherry Connell has talked about it, and I'm sure she'd be happy to make arrangements.
Well, actually, I'm looking for sponsors, too, and Team Hope Walkers, our Central Coast Team Hope Walk is at Waller Park on May 21st. So we're looking for people to participate, and, you know, we're always looking for sponsors for HD. There's so much to be done, so much work to be done to help our HDers, and it takes money. It takes awareness, but it takes money, too, so everybody's looking for that. But I did want to ask you one more question about your experience with the Parkinson's study group. Have you found similarities in the Parkinson's and the Huntington's study endeavors?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. First of all, a lot of the people are the same. So there are individuals who care for Parkinson's patients as well as Huntington's patients who do research on Parkinson's disease as well as Huntington's disease, and also people who do work on Alzheimer's disease, spinocerebellar degenerations, a host of too many neurological conditions that are caused by what we call degeneration of nerve cells. Many of these have a genetic basis, so that's really what ties people together. And yes, there's a to and fro, and we learned a lot from Parkinson's disease that we applied to Huntington's clinical trials. Now we're learning in Parkinson's disease new information about the genetics of Parkinson's disease that, of course, is something that we've been mindful of in Huntington's disease for many generations.
Really? Wow. So are you finding that you're able to utilize some of the same kind of directives for HSG that you used in the Parkinson's study group?
I'm sorry, some of the same what?
Same, like directives, same kind of procedures or processes.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's really an efficiency of scale. And I mean, a clinical trial actually in Huntington's disease is not too different from a good clinical trial in cancer, in a whole variety of research settings, heart disease, kidney disease, whatever. So we all work together in this world of clinical research and clinical trials.
So there's much to be learned from one trial to the next and how you can possibly utilize that information for the next trial.
Absolutely. In fact, if you don't learn anything from the trial you're doing now, you shouldn't be doing it.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Is there anything else that we left out that you can think of that you'd like to announce? Or
no, I think that covered it. I just want to thank you in closing for providing the opportunity. And
look forward to
the growth of your radio blog, Hope for HD, your increased audience, and come back sometime, either I
definitely
or other members of the Huntington Study Group,
I'm
to talk more with you.
I'm very happy that you agreed to come on and speak to us, and you're just an amazing person. Appreciate all the hard work you're doing, and keep working. Don't stop. We really appreciate you more than you know. So thank you again for the show, and have a great evening, and the best to your team.
Best to you, Melissa. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.